Welcome to the Junior MBA Coaches Corner with your host, Jay Billis. Today, Jay welcomes Chicago Bulls head coach, Jim Boylan, head coach of the Texas Longhorns, Shaka Smart, and director of the Premier Basketball Report and Camps, Shane Laughlin. And now, here's your host, Jay Billis.
Well, welcome to Junior NBA Coaches Corner. We have a fantastic panel of coaches, as we always do, but this one has a special place for me because of knowing these guys, but also wanted to talk about the topic. And the topic is going to be defense, which is a broad one, but we are going to try to get to exactly how you get your defensive identity. We're going to talk about half-court defense, about pressing and different philosophies. And we have with us just three outstanding gentlemen: Jim Boylan, the head coach of the Chicago Bulls, Shaka Smart, the head coach of the Texas Longhorns, and Shane Laughlin, the director of Premier Basketball Report and also Premier Basketball Camps. And to start, I just want to tell you a little bit about each one of our panelists, so to speak. And we'll start with Jim Boylan, who was an outstanding player at the University of Maine. He was an all-conference player, averaged 21 points per game his senior year, and not many people may remember this, but he finished second in player of the year voting in his conference to the great Reggie Lewis of Northeastern. And Jim is an NBA coach right now with the Chicago Bulls, but he's coached with the Rockets, the Warriors, the Bucks, the Pacers, and the Spurs. He was an assistant coach at Michigan State twice, once under Judd Heathcote, once under Tom Izzo, and also the head coach at the University of Utah. And we also have with us Shaka Smart, the outstanding coach of the Texas Longhorns right now. But he was also a fine player at Kenyon College in Ohio, where he's still the all-time assist leader. So he was giving it up even back then. University of Akron as an assistant, Clemson under Oliver Purnell, and spent time as an assistant under Billy Donovan at the University of Florida. Perhaps best known as a head coach at VCU, where he took the Rams to the Final Four in 2011 out of the first four. And there were actually commentators back then that questioned whether VCU should have been in the tournament. And what bunch of idiots those guys were. I can't imagine what it was like to be them right now. And then also we've got Shane Laughlin, went to UT Arlington and was cum laude as a student and was an assistant coach at the University of Texas under Jody Conrad, also at assistant coach at Rice, and now the director, as we said before, of the Premier Basketball Camps and the Premier Basketball Report. And gentlemen, I can't thank you guys enough for being with us. It's such an honor to have you. And the topic is a wide one. That's defense. And wanted to start out, and I'll start with you, Jim, as the oldest horse in the barn here next to me. In establishing a defensive identity, which coaches talk about all the time, how do you determine what your defensive identity is going to be? Is it based on personnel or is it based on your philosophy? And then how do you establish that defensive identity?
Well, I think there's two ways to look at it. In college, my college experience was I was going to teach what I thought fit our personnel. I had big centers at Utah, so we were going to drop them and protect the rim and then work our defense from there. In the pros, I think your personnel matters, but you also want a system that you can draft to, free agent to, and build. As you know, Jay, it takes time to build a defense. It doesn't happen in 1 year. I got a kick out of the Last Dance. You know, Coach Jackson said it took him a year and a half to learn the triangle. And those are some of the best players to ever play the game. So defensively, I think it's a process too. And some of it's personnel, but a lot of it is your belief system. And I tell young coaches, coach what you know. You know, coach what you're confident in teaching, and it'll resonate and you'll succeed.
You know, Shaka, you brought a belief system to VCU from your time as an assistant that was of a pressing nature. And look, presses can be used different ways. You can use a press to speed the game. You can use it to slow it down. How did you establish your pressing culture at VCU when you started there?
Well, I think the first thing is just building a mindset, you know, what you're going to be about as a basketball team, as a basketball program. We use the word havoc there at VCU, but it's interesting. That was more about our approach and our mentality than it was about anything X and O wise. I think the thing about defense, Jay, is the other teams on offense. So part of it is, you know, what's going to be most effective against the teams that you play, particularly the best teams on your schedule, because maybe you could use a certain style and still win big against some of the lesser teams. But what's going to be the most effective against the teams that you really want to beat, particularly at the end of the year? So for us, as you mentioned, people are creatures of habit. You know, the habit that I had been in as a first as a player and then as an assistant coach was pressing. I was comfortable with that. Love the energy that comes out of that. So we tried to build that first and foremost just through playing with great energy, getting our hands on the basketball, having an enthusiasm for making people uncomfortable. And then obviously there has to be a corresponding half-court defense that goes along with your full-court defense, because regardless of how good you are in a press, most of the time the other team's going to get the ball across half-court.
Let me follow up just one second there. In pressing, there's got to be a commitment. And what's more important, and I know they're both important, what's more important, the commitment of the players to the pressing system or the commitment of the coach to the philosophy?
That's a great question. I think they're both really important, and not just the coach. You know, I think the whole staff. I'll never forget when I worked for Billy at Florida. We had a great staff, and one of the guys on the staff was Larry Shiat, who you know really well, Jay. And we would literally be sitting on either sides of Billy, and he stood up a lot. But, you know, a play would occur, and Shy would say, "We got to get out of this press, man. This thing's killing us." And I would say, "No, man, we got to keep pressing." So some of it is just, you know, your mentality, but it does really help when as a staff you have a commitment to it. And that leads to the player commitment for sure. But it's also going to have to be something where you recruit guys or you bring guys in that, you know, have that hunger and that passion level. We've even had guys here at Texas J that during the recruiting process, you know, wanted to make sure that we weren't going to press to a certain extent. Mo was like that, which is amazing because he was a terrific defensive player and is almost ideally suited to the back of the press. But he was like, "Hey, I don't want to press too much because that takes away from some of the things I might be able to do offensively."
That's interesting. You know, Shane, when you think about defense with younger players, especially, and you deal with them, I want to say almost exclusively now, what are some of the most important skills that a young defender needs to have in order to move on as a player?
Yeah, so we always try to frame things to them and talk to them about getting to the next level and their aspirations and, you know, trying to get them to understand the importance of getting down in an active stance consistently and helping them understand that there's multiple efforts to plays. And so a lot of them are willing to compete and they're excited to compete on the ball. But off the ball, they catch themselves standing and watching and certainly not in an ability to help or stunt and recover and trying to teach them how to understand that there are actions that they're a part of, even if they're not part of that action, whether it's the weak side or they're the primary help or the secondary help. So we just try to bring some energy to the players that are under our umbrella or that come to the camp to teach them the value of being in a stance, continuing to make plays. You can make plays defensively just like you make plays on offense, understanding what you're capable of and knowing that not everybody can contain somebody in a closeout by themselves, but can they alter some things? Can they understand the value of challenging shots, being crowding a shooter, understanding the closer you are, the lower the percentage shot is. So we try to, you know, with the experience I had at the collegiate level, try to help them understand fundamentally when they get on campus someplace, what would be expected of them as far as their willingness to learn and accept some new ideas. Because basically when they get to college, you're teaching them how to play defense. Not a lot of them have those concepts ready. And so, you know, you think of personnel when you're building those systems, but really you go to your system, you're teaching them the passion and the ability to play defense when they get there.
Jay, well, speaking of that, go ahead, Jim.
I think that's an interesting point because we start with your off the ball stance and position, because 4/5 of the time, if you split the game equally, you're not guarding a man with the ball. Mm-hmm. So I think in a player's mind, sometimes it's reverse. It's, I want to compete on the ball. I want to control my matchup when he has the ball. And then there's a attitude of off the ball isn't as important. And so if 80% of the time you're off the ball, I think it's something that you need to focus on. And that's just like a mindset and maybe a culture change in your program. But it's interesting. Our guys don't think that way.
That is an interesting point. And Jim, to that point, when talking about help defense, which we're saying that you're going to be in 80% of the time as a player, and then to the coaching point, I saw you at a clinic one time, and I remember you saying that one of the first things you have to determine in your defense is which way are you going to push the ball or influence? Are you going to influence it to the sideline? Are you going to influence to the middle? Are you going to play chest to chest? Can you expound on that and why it's so important for your help defense?
So much pick and roll basketball is played now. So in the old days, you kind of started from the post out, Jay. I think maybe when you played, when I played, you'd guard the post, you'd have a technique, and you'd work out to the floor. Now, a lot of times we start with our pick and roll coverages. Are we going to force the ball down to the sideline? Are we going to push the ball to the screen, to the middle of the floor? So in Chicago, we push the ball to the screen, to the middle of the floor, and then you have options out of that. So we establish that first. We are going to try to get into that hip, push it to the screen. We're going to communicate early. And at the screen, Jay, we can switch. We can show. We can blitz. We can level show, flat show, black, you know, whatever your terminology is. And it gives you options, but also you're dictating where the ball's going, which I know the coaches on the podcast today believe in that. So that's the fun part of it. Again, I always revert to my experience at Utah. I had 7'7" centers. So we were a force down. People call it blue. They'll call it ice. We were one of the first teams really in the country to do that in college. And it was more about personnel. Now I had to teach our guards how to pursue over the top, Jay, and compete playing from behind because you're channeling the ball into the non-rim two area.
Shaka, how about you? In your experience at VCU as a head coach at Texas, how do you approach guarding the ball? Do you influence one way or the other? Do you just play straight up and try to take away penetration?
Well, I love hearing Coach Boylan talk about starting with the pick and roll. And I actually remember when I first got to Texas, he was an assistant with Coach Popovich and the Spurs. And I went down there to watch one of our VCU guys work out in a pre-draft type of thing. And Coach Boylan took me through, a couple different pick and roll coverages that they use. And that's one of the things that we miss right now, you know, not being able to be in the gym together and just share ideas. I'm a little bit different. And the great thing about coaching is you can do it a million different ways. But I actually think that the biggest thing for our guys when they're guarding the ball is to stay in between the ball and the basket. So we're not really going to send you middle or send you down to the baseline. Now, obviously, when a pick and roll occurs, you know, you certainly have to be ready to deal with that. But if we can keep people out of the paint and contest a three-point shot, we feel like, you know, we'll be pretty decent guarding the pick and roll. So for us, it's straight up. If you're much better, Jay, going right, then we might shade you a little bit in the other direction. You know, I found that, you know, at the college level, the vast majority of players, even the better players, a guy like a Devin Dotson at Kansas, who's a terrific point guard, are much better going one direction than the other. So whether it's on drives or in pick and rolls, if you can influence them the other way, sometimes that can take away from their effectiveness if you do a good job with it. But again, if you get too much on the side of somebody, good players are going to make you pay for that.
How do you, in playing head up or chest to chest, as Jim likes to put it, how do you position your help when you're playing head up on the ball? So if say the ball's on the right wing, how would you position your help?
Well, it's interesting because I've changed some. When I was at VCU, we were denial. We were really trying to extend the floor and, you know, Tony Bennett was right down the road at UVA, had worked with him on USA Basketball on a staff, so was friendly with him and his staff. And, you know, I remember always asking him, Jay, do you think it'd be possible to press like we do, but then play half-court defense somewhat similar to you, maybe not the exact same, but playing defense off the ball in the gaps. And I remember him always saying, I don't see why not. So we actually play now in what we call load position, which is when you're one pass away, being in an open stance, you know, being able to see man and ball, being in the position to help so that you don't have to, as we would say, two-way stunt, which is go, you know, go to help and then go back to your man. You should already be in position to give the help. So that's what we teach. And then probably the most important thing is the guys that are defending the weak side to be on what Billy always used to call the white line, which is that line down the middle of the floor. Now, once you get screening actions involved, everything goes out the window. So that's what makes it imperfect for sure. And it's so much based on personnel when you're dealing with guys coming off of screens.
Shane, when you're teaching defense at your premier basketball camps, how do you go about it? Do you put them in shell drill to try to teach them principles, or how exactly do you go about that?
Yeah, you want to get a feel for kind of what they know and what they don't know in some basic shell. And if you can get through at the different levels, the different ages, the different levels of elite of the camp or whatever, and sometimes we'll get in and do some consulting with high school teams and club teams, so we get those angles as well. You kind of check their IQ through that, and then you might start to talk to them about valuing keeping the ball in front, much like Coach was just talking about. You want that ball handler to see help before they even want to put it on the floor. And so we really try to work to keep active hands and chest up. And as I've heard coaches say, like, if you're going to foul, foul with your chest, trying to just keep the ball in front. So teach them the value of not getting into rotations, because that's what leads to your breakdowns. And as much spacing as played with now, and, you know, nobody really posting up hard, really ball side on the block anymore. Just trying to teach them how to get down, use their length or use their minds, use their angles to keep between the ball handler and the rim. And then understand that, okay, so then we're going to teach you next rotational stuff to where the weak side has to, you know, sprint out, close out, and everybody's going to flood that paint. Just maintaining, keeping the ball out of the paint for the most part, understanding that tough twos is what you want, and you want to, of course, limit layups and open threes.
Yeah, Jim, I remember it watching you at clinics again when you would talk about 4-on-4 shell drill. And you always wanted to make it competitive. And I remember you saying something one time that really, really made an impact on me. It was on recovery. First, you had talked about the further your man is away from the ball, the more you can help. And then I think it was that same clinic, you brought up the concept that I had not really heard much before about you recover to help, not necessarily to your man. Can you explain that a little bit?
Sure. Again, I think most of the time you're off the ball. So how can you support your teammate? I know you had Coach Izzo on. He talks about six-eye help in those gaps. What I like to think of it as is I'm responsible to protect my teammate. And I do that by not worrying about my man. And that's a habit you have to break. And so we established the line of the ball in our system, and that creates that moment where you have a visual, you have a reference point of your stance in a help position. And that's maybe the number one thing for us. So that is done, Jay, 1-on-1, it's done 2-on-2, it's done 3-on-3. The 3-on-3 drill we call the Nagani drill, which is a little town in northern Michigan where a high school coach did it there, and it just kind of resonated. But my guys give me a hard time about calling it Nagani. They go, why do you call it something like that? It's just the city that we saw it in. But I think it's this mindset, Jay, that I am going to not waste steps back to a man that doesn't have the ball. And what Coach Smart said about two-way help, we call it you want to be one way. You want to be in and then recover to your man when the ball is passed to him.
And establish, can you expound a little bit more on establishing the line of the ball and what you mean by that?
Sure. So what I do, and Coach Smart, we might have done this when you were in the gym. I get a rope out, and I get two or three players out depending on what we're working on. But you establish the line of the ball from one player to the other, and it's a rope. I usually have a 45-foot rope. I put the players 15 feet apart. You can get three players on one rope. And they can visually see the line. They can see. And then you establish your stance on that line, which is one step off the line, one full step, and then into the middle of those two players. And usually it's two steps from your man to make up the half point of that 15 feet, Jay, if that makes sense here without a court. But and once a player gets that visual, and you know, everybody learns differently, and I think that's where I think we've grown in coaching. You know, we hit it in the video room. We hit it on the floor. We walk through it. Some guys are kinesthetic. You know, you got to kind of touch them and turn them on. Some guys are visual. Some guys are tonal. So the rope, I think, is a prop that kind of gives them the visual of what their stance should look like in a help position, which is not taught everywhere. And if it is taught, sometimes people are on the line, Jay, which now you lose vision, now you get back cut. And then the last piece of this is you can move the rope, and defense is not a stationary position. And you're constantly adjusting your alignment without swiveling your head. I talk a lot about your head defensively, because once your head starts swiveling, that's a sign you're in the wrong position. And that happens quickly, even at our level. And you'll see guys at our level get beat from the corner all the time, get backdoored, get face cut. And it's because we're in a position of our body where our head's trying to make sense of it. And what we have to do is get our body in the right position, understanding the line of the ball, and then our head will be clear and we'll have vision on what's going on.
Hey, Coach Boylan, do you guys teach head being kind of straight ahead so that you can see the ball here and your man here? Is that how you guys do it?
We do. And what I say is if you feel like you have to turn your head, you're in the wrong position. And that's, you just keep it real simple that way. If you feel like I can't see both with my peripheral vision, we talk about pointing our pointers and having a feel for the position we're in. So I just think it's a real simple thing. We all know what this looks like, right?
Yep.
We all know what this looks like when you're locked in. And then the other part of it is, I think sometimes a player feels he can't react as fast when he's in a stance that's on the line of the ball. What usually the problem is, Coach, is he's not moving the foot in the direction he's going first. Mm. We call it a negative step. So to go this way, I want to move this foot first. A lot of guys twist and move this foot first. So now they're already beat, and they blame it on vision, and it's not on vision. It's on stance and movement.
Yeah,
Shaka, to that point about peripheral vision, I took a driving class years ago and was told by a pro driver, he's the first one that educated me on this, and I looked it up and checked it out, that your peripheral vision is actually better than your straight-on vision, because that's your fight or flight vision. And it was demonstrated by, I was driving 60 miles an hour through cones and went through the first time, and it was herky-jerky. And the driver asked me, do you know why that is? And I said, no. And he says, you're looking at the cones. And he says, anything you're looking at, you're going to hit, and you're going to over-focus on. He says, look at the horizon, and you will pick up the cones with your peripheral vision. Did it again, and it was unbelievably smooth through there. And I do that now all the time when I drive. I'm looking at where I'm going, and I pick up everything else. It's really remarkable when you look at that. And to that, Chuck, let me ask you this, that I heard in a practice, I've always heard coaches say, see the ball. You have to see the ball as a defender. And I remember being at a Louisville practice years and years ago, and Rick Pitino said, play the ball, see your man. Is that something you talk about, or is that just a distinction without a difference?
Yeah, I think sometimes in coaching we do say certain things like that are kind of, you know, brain benders, so that the next thing is to explain, which I'm sure Coach Pitino digs. He's, in my opinion, as good as any college coach there's been in the last 25 years, what he meant by that. Do this for all the coaches watching. Go and watch a college game from this past year. I don't know about the NBA, obviously, because the rules are different, but a college game, and watch a team that plays, you know, pretty significant help defense, you know, not somebody that's necessarily denying passing lanes. And it is amazing how often off the ball that the four defenders, or at least some of them, are just flat out staring at the ball. I mean, no understanding or vision of where their guy is. I actually went back and kind of did an offensive study of our own team from this past year. And I'm kind of mad at myself that I didn't notice that more. How often we allowed a defender on the other team to not look at us at all and to kind of stay in the same place. So he knows where we are and he's staring at the ball. Obviously, offensively, you want to have that guy cut or move. You want to make that defender pay. But absolutely, we say we have these T-shirts that we print out. They say get set, S-E-T. So the S stands for stance, which Shane talked about. The E stands for eyes, which is vision of man and ball. And then the T stands for talk. And to us, those are the three kind of fundamental parts of defense. If you don't have those things, then it's going to be tough to be good at much else.
How much, Shane, do you work on talk with your players and trying to develop them?
A ton, because it's like pulling teeth. And it's like in our setting, whether, you know, it's a camp setting or a club setting, accountability tools are not something we can really use because you don't see them every day. But we beg them and let them know that it's really important. And the only real thing we can do is like, okay, we're going to tell you not to talk. And it's almost like they realize how quiet it is after that. I stuck my head in a couple small workouts this weekend because we're in Texas, so we have the ability to be in gyms again right now. And there was a couple really quiet defensive possessions. And you just want to point it out when they can and then kind of assign somebody to start talking and say what you see. And then they find their voice and they find their leadership. So some of that is them being a little shy and they think they don't know what to say. And you just tell them, talk about what you see. And we'll get to the terminology later, you know, and your teams will have terminology. But you'll find that it makes your life easier. You can make your teammates' life easier if you'll just communicate what you see through actions, especially off the ball. And then if you're one of those people who can really wreak some havoc, you know, in help or be, you know, lengthy or go rebound or whatever. So we just try to emphasize it while we can, because in terms they look at us as a little bit of a gateway to the next level sometimes. So we try to emphasize that a whole lot.
I think
how big of an issue is talk for you, Jim, at the NBA level?
Well, it's our lifeblood. You know, it's something we stress and we try to build habits with our communication. We try to have terse, succinct terminology, one word hitters that can be forcefully said. But I think what we've tried to do is give our communicate. Everybody says you got to communicate, you got to talk, you got to communicate. I try to give it more of a powerful word of, we talk about protection. And the analogy I use is if a loved one was crossing the street and did not see a car coming and was in jeopardy of getting run over, would you soft speak it? Would you not say anything? Or would you scream out loud, you know, watch out, hey, stop, you know? And that's protection. And I think if you can build that with your team, that you're going to protect each other with your communication, I think you have something. I also think that when you have a team that talks, and we've all played against teams that talk well and communicate well, it's intimidating, Jay. You know, it's a culture thing. It's a toughness thing. It's a together thing. And I think that's kind of how you have to sell it. Now, if it comes to texting somebody or calling somebody or singing the songs people like, you know, everybody does that. But you got to get them to protect each other, and that's what we talk about.
God, that's a great way to put it, protection. And Shaka, how do you teach talk and communication?
I think Coach K is the best at our level at teaching it. And particularly he's done that with even young teams, you know, obviously the past several years. I asked him one summer at USA Basketball how he does it. And, you know, he said accountability, you know, he expounded on that to some extent. But I think Coach Boylan's exactly right. You know, you don't want to necessarily give guys these five syllable, you know, words or terms to try to spit out. Sometimes with young players, when they're trying to communicate, they literally, they look like they have marbles in their mouth. They can't get it out. So I think, you know, making your language as simple and succinct and concise as possible is huge. You know, we just try to rep it. And, you know, one thing that's going to be fascinating in the coming months is going to be how we're able to teach some of the team concepts that we want to teach on defense or on offense without necessarily being able to have the whole team together at once. And that's going to be kind of a unique thing in this time period. But I think Coach Boylan's exactly right. You got to hit it from different angles. There's, you know, there's the physical reps, there's the film, there's showing examples. There's some great, you know, 30-second or one-minute clips of whether it's Rajon Rondo or P.J. Tucker or different guys that were mic'd, you know, while they were playing. And it's just nonstop talk. And I think for younger players, watching that and listening to that is way more powerful than anything that we can say as a coach, because here these guys are that are at a high level and are helping their team win. And just the urgency with which they're talking, it really feeds into that term of protection that Coach is talking about.
Yeah, Shaq, I want to start with you on this because I want to talk a little bit about full court pressure and pressing. And I remember with your Havoc system of pressure, especially at VCU, I remember some of your goals being, you know, one, to force turnovers. I think you wanted to force bad shots or quick shots. Create offense off your defense, and you also wanted to push the tempo and make your opponent play at a level that they don't practice or at a rate that they don't practice. But in addition to that, I want you to talk about that. But in addition, I want all of you to talk about trapping. When do you trap? How do you trap? And then who do you trap? So just tell us a little bit about about full court pressure and the elements of it. And the why of full court pressure.
I'll try to be concise with that one, Jay. That's a lot. But I think if you're going to play that way, the biggest thing you're trying to do is impose your will on the other team. And you're trying to take them out of having the ability to play the game the way that they practice every day. So now they're having to react and adjust to you. You mentioned tempo. It's interesting. Sometimes teams that press, actually their possessions are longer. Because if you don't steal the ball, now it's going to take them longer to get it over half court. It takes them 5 or 6 seconds to get organized, and then they're going to run whatever action they run. And so now, like some of the years at VCU, our tempo length was actually longer, even though we were pressing and trying to speed the game up. The biggest measurable, Jay, for us, and this is what I recommend to any, you know, high school coach or anyone that wants to play that way, is deflections. Getting your hands on the basketball, and we have a specific number that we go for that's 32 or more. What we found in 11 years, we've only lost one game, you know, when we got that many deflections. It's just for us, it's a magical number that, hey, if you're getting your hands on a basketball, you're playing with great energy, you're flying around, you're disrupting the other team. You mentioned trapping. I think in college, actually, Jay, it's tougher to trap now than it was 10 years ago because of the way the game's officiated. I think the refs, and I know it's a hard job, but I think they let defenses beat the crap out of people around the basket and in the half court. But I think when you trap out on the floor, that's actually being called much, much more. Yeah, have, as you know, the cylinder rule, the infamous cylinder rule. And so teams that, you know, we're really good at trapping, have to be more careful with that. We used to have like 8 or 10 teaching points, man, when I was a young, probably overzealous coach teaching it. We pretty much boiled it down to two things when you trap. Take away the space. Obviously, a trap where you give the guy with the ball a ton of space is a bad trap and almost always leads to a good shot for the other team. And then number two, extremely active hands. So if you can take away the space and have extremely active hands. Obviously, there's a few other things that go into it, but if you can do those two things, you're going to be in good shape.
I want to get you guys to comment on this. You know, Shaka, you mentioned deflections and having a goal of 30, 32. And I remember you saying, this is probably years ago, that which gets measured gets done. Jim, what do you measure with your team as far as goals for your defense?
Well, we start in transition. I think that's the number one thing. We'd like to keep people out of transition, make them earn their baskets. One thing we have to do better this year is our rim rate and our rim rate percentage. We struggled with that this year. We did lead the league in turnovers, forcing turnovers this year. which was a hell of a stat for us, which allowed us to get out and run. And I'd just like to talk about the trapping real quick, Jay, if I may.
Please, yeah.
I've not been a part of a whole bunch of teams that trap full court. Most of my career has been in the NBA. That hasn't happened a whole bunch. There is a time and place for it. So that's an area that I need to grow and learn. But one thing we have done is we've been real aggressive in our pick and roll coverages in Chicago last year. And as much as young coaches think about trapping or blitzing or hard hedge or flat shows or whatever you're thinking about doing, that's to me not the most important part of that defensive scheme. As we know, defense is a five-man fundamental, but how do you build your back line? And then how do you script your recovery to breakdowns? To me, that's what makes your defense special, is can we react when the ball goes maybe where we don't want it to? And I think Coach mentioned, you know, hands, and I know his teams are real aggressive, and, you know, we script our bigs' hands where they need to be, where our smallest hands need to be, and then we script the defense behind. But don't forget that part of it. It's a five-man fundamental, and your three guys that form that triangle behind in any defense is going to be the lifeblood if your defense is successful or not. Because you're going to make some mistakes on the ball, Jay. You're going to be late. You're going to, you know, people are crafty. People are good. People sprint in the pick and roll. And you know how hard that is, chasing a guy up in the pick and roll. It's tough. So your back line and your ability to absorb a breakdown is a big part of what you should be teaching.
And Shaka, that you call that basically fix it, right? Haven't you preached to your players, you got to be able to, it's not going to be perfect and you're going to have to fix it.
Yeah, a couple of things. One, Coach Boylan is so correct on that. I mean, as much as you want to teach the trap and the fundamentals of the trap, if the three guys outside the trap are not in the right position, you're in real trouble. But it's three guys, and if it's a trap, then you got two interceptors and a goaltender. But you need those guys in the right stance. You need those guys' vision to be the right way. You want those guys to steal the obvious pass. Hopefully the trappers have made one of the passes the obvious one. But absolutely, we call fix it simply when the ball gets passed out of a trap or a transition situation, sprinting, getting matched up, taking away open shots, making sure that nobody's left open.
Jay, can I add something to that, please?
Mm-hmm.
I think the other thing too is we don't talk about stealing the ball. We talk about being in the right body position and the ball is thrown to you. And, you know, I worked for Popovich, Tomjanovich, Izzo, and some great defensive coaches, and they never Frank Vogel, you know, was a terrific defensive coach. Nobody really talks about stealing the ball. We want active hands like Coach Smart's talking about. We want to be aggressive. But your body position leads to steals and allows you to not get out of your defense, be solid as hell. And it's amazing how often the offense will throw it to you.
Shane, what do you measure with your players? Is it something you will keep stats and keep charts as to what their productivity level? Are they getting deflections, things like that? Is that something you work on and you use?
Well, as a college coach, for sure. Points in the paint, challenge shots, rebounding efficiency, things of that nature. Definitely playing without fouling, like keeping people off the free throw line. You know, all of these things are just – it's awesome to – I have a million questions for both you guys now, but like Coach Smart, you know, you guys play in the diamond press. I've seen some stuff before. I was at Rice when Mike Rhodes came there. So then, of course, I went and, like, tried to get all of your stuff and watch it and understand his practices because they come in fast and in the fury we're putting in that system. And I know I remember, like, a term you used was, like, trap with elasticity and keep an active hands and not get those cheap fouls. And is that kind of one of those things that's, like, high hands, you want to put the ball into the air so you have time for rotation. And then the other part of that was, like, when you talk about your guys off the ball, your threesome and your rotation, that's kind of like where you'd prefer for the ball to go. It's like Coach Boylan's point, recovering to help. So you kind of have those scenarios that you know how you want to rotate because you know what you're willing to give up in your given press, whether it was the double fist or the diamond.
Well, the elasticity is just based on the fact that they may put the ball on the floor and try to dribble out of the trap. So you can't be a statue, you know, just standing there in a trap. In terms of the pass out of the trap, again, the two trappers' job is to force an obvious pass. So in other words, if you can envision a guy getting trapped, if he can pick you apart and pass it to option A, option B, option C under no duress, then he's going to be able to make one of those passes. But if you can do a good job in the trap and get him to pivot away, now maybe only option A is one that he could make. He'd literally have to go behind his back to mm-hmm. throw it to option C. That allows the guys off the ball to rotate. Mm-hmm. And again, I love what Coach Boylan said, to get in position so that literally they throw you the ball. So for us, it's more about teaching that than really any type of specific rotation when the ball is passed out. Because you made this comment earlier, you want to give guys the freedom to make plays. And that's what great defensive players do. I think we probably all would agree the best defensive players we've been around went and made some plays that we didn't necessarily dictate or tell them to make. You just try to create a structure so that you can kind of get out of their way and put them in the best position to make as many of those plays as possible.
Shaka, when you were talking about a trap and having a goaltender and two interceptors, so the goaltender seems to obvious is going to protect the basket. Then you've got one of your interceptors, I think you said, taking away the most obvious pass. The other interceptor, is that player playing more of a rover or taking away the second most obvious pass?
Okay, well, let's say, Jay, the ball's been trapped right over half court on the right side of the floor. Really good offensive players don't bring the ball there to get trapped, but let's just say that they do. Your goaltender would be making sure that the ball doesn't get over his head to the basket. He can creep up as much as possible without that thing, you know, getting to over his head. Then you'd have an interceptor side, so he'd be taking away that ball side sideline in an open stance, ready to run through that pass, and you'd have an interceptor high. So he'd be the one in charge of taking away the pass across the court. Typically, those two guys are splitting three options. You know, most good teams are going to create three options for a guy that's being trapped. So you're talking about two guys splitting three, and now it's the trapper's job to make sure they put that guy under enough duress that those three options are not all equal for him. You want to kind of make it obvious that he's going to have to pass it up the sideline right now the way that he's facing or the way that he's pivoted, if that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense. And Jim, you know, there are so many resources available to coaches now, especially young coaches, but one of my favorites and one of the best has been eCoach. And I get the emails every day from eCoach and watch the videos, and you've actually been, you did one of the videos, and I believe it was actually on establishing a ball line. What has eCoach provided to the coaching community?
Well, I think it's done a bunch of things. I think, first of all, it's put the emphasis on teaching, which I think is why we all got into this, right? We wanted to teach and help and support, and we wanted to learn from each other. So it does that really well. So much of our jobs now, Jay, as you know, is not basketball teaching related. So I think it's built a chemistry and a camaraderie that way. I think it's also helped us all dive into what we believe in, what we care about, and what we want to teach people that we think is important. The format, the way they do it, I filmed mine in Vegas during the Summer League, just unbelievable professional organization. And they give you a lot of freedom to kind of teach what you know and what you like. And I think the videos come off really helpful for every level of coach. And there's something in there for individual development. There's something in there for team development. And then what we all feel like we have a feel for what we want, Jay, but how do we get there? How do we teach? How do we start with the foundation of our defense? You don't just throw five guys out there and say, okay, play defense. You know, so it gives you some drills and some things you can hang your hat on to develop your team. And I think we're all looking for that all the time.
Well, before we let you guys go, I want to ask one non-basketball question and start with Shane, then go Shane, Jim, Shaka. Your first concert that you ever attended in person.
Oh, man. My dad told me I was a toddler and he took me to the Rolling Stones concert. So if that counts, that might explain.
That's a good a lot. First concert.
And then the first one I remember, I think might have been Aerosmith in high school or something like that. So yeah, those two. So,
God, you already beat me by a landslide. Jim, your first concert.
My first concert was on the way driving from Grand Rapids, Michigan to Florida. We stopped in the University of Kentucky. Four of my buddies, one of my buddies, Ricky Brown's sister, went to Kentucky, and the Police were playing that Rupp Arena, and we saw the Police in Rupp Arena, and we sat in the last seat in the upper deck.
That's pretty good. Shaka, what was yours?
You're going to get a laugh out of this one. It was MC Hammer, Boyz II Men, and Jodeci. And I actually had never heard of Jodeci when I went to that concert, and it ended up being by far my most favorite of the three. But yeah, that was a memorable night.
Jeez, I am in fourth place by a long shot. I my first concert was the Go-Go's, opened by Flock of Seagulls.
Nice.
That's a huge problem. Well, thank you guys for being with us. It was great to have you, and man, we learned a lot today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jay.
For more coaching resources, including our curriculum, please visit juniornba.com. I want to thank our friends at the NBA Coaches Association and eCoach for providing instructional content from their eCoach basketball video library to give our viewers an insider's perspective about how NBA coaches teach the topic we're focusing upon each week. For more information and to access the coaches video library, go to eCoachBasketball.com.
Next week on the Junior NBA Coaches Corner, Jay welcomes Georgia head coach Tom Crean from the Cleveland Cavaliers, Lindsey Gottlieb, and head coach at John Champ High School in Virginia, Walt Webb, to discuss offensive plays and systems. Thanks for listening. Make sure to join Jay each week for the Junior NBA Coaches Corner. Go to juniornba.com or wherever your favorite podcasts are found.